Welcome to the Climate Report on WFMP FM Louisville. This is Hart Hagen, your host, and we are on episode number 107. Today's topic is Tulsi Gabbard. We'll be talking about Tulsi Gabbard in a few minutes, but first, here's what the Climate Report is all about. At the Climate Report, we believe that climate change is real, and it's not in the distant future. In fact, the catastrophic effects of climate change are already upon us. The catastrophic effects of climate change are not in the distant future or in the near future. They are here and now, in the present, and some of them are already past. We've got the warming of the oceans. We've got the oceans having absorbed a great deal of the carbon dioxide, the excess carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Both the warming of the oceans and the excess carbon dioxide in the oceans are bad for marine life. We have the warming of the atmosphere that is melting the ice caps, the polar ice cap, the Arctic ice cap, and melting Antarctica, and melting glaciers such as in Greenland, and melting snow caps on mountains. You know, all the mountains of the world, all the tall mountains of the world, have snow caps, and the valleys below depend on the gradual melting of those snow caps during the summer. The wildlife depends on that, and the agricultural production depends on the gradual melting, and that's also where people get their water. That's where people get their drinking water. When those snow caps melt, it's like, for 10,000 years, we've had a relatively stable climate. Now we have created a situation where we don't have a stable climate, and we're putting our very existence at risk. So not only do we have the warming of the oceans, excess CO2 in the oceans, we also have melting of the snow caps, we have melting of the glaciers, we have warming of the oceans that's going to cause a dramatic rise in sea levels in the foreseeable future. We have the warming of the tundra in the Arctic, which is causing the release of methane, which is also a greenhouse gas. So I wish I had better news, but you know, as a society, it's really, at this point in time, it's not really my job to give good news. I mean, we can have fun solving this problem, but we first have to acknowledge the problem. And we have to shake our society awake so that we know the extent and the urgency of this problem. And climate change is only one of the existential threats, only one of the problems that is a threat to our existence. Other problems that are a threat to our existence have a common origin, have the same origin as climate change. So we have climate change because of runaway greed. We have climate change because corporations of the world want to just sell us a bunch of stuff, irrespective of the impact of that stuff on the habitability of the planet. We have, you know, we have corporations wanting us to just consume, as if there's no tomorrow, as if there are no limits on the resources that we are consuming. And not only are individuals supposed to consume a lot, but governments are supposed to consume a lot. And one thing that governments consume a lot of is weapons. So the United States has a trillion dollar a year budget for weapons, and that includes nuclear weapons. And according to sources that I trust, including Tulsi Gabbard, the subject of this episode, including Noam Chomsky, including Daniel Ellsberg, who brought us the Pentagon Papers back in the 60s. These are sources that I trust that tell us that we are at greater risk of nuclear war now than ever. And let me tell you, there are no winners in a nuclear war. Nobody wins a nuclear war. And yet we keep building up and building up and building up. And it has nothing to do with the security of the people of the United States, let alone the security of people anywhere else in the world. Weapons build up, whether it's conventional weapons or nuclear weapons, is all about selling things to corporations that have bought our government. So that's two threats to our existence, climate change and nuclear weapons. A third threat to our existence is agribusiness. Agribusiness is this monster that delivers food to us, but it delivers food to us in a way that is entirely and completely unsustainable. Agribusiness thinks nothing, and I mean nothing, about chewing up rainforests just so as to grow crops or grow, cattle grazing. So we have this political and economic system that incentivizes corporations to sell us whatever they can sell us to make a profit. And at the end of the day, a corporation is nothing but a money machine. You put money in and you want to get more money out. And the investors of these corporations are sometimes several degrees of separation removed from the damage that they do. So it's a little bit understandable that investors in corporations don't understand the damage that gets done, but it's also understandable that some people in this world are greedy to the point of being psychopathic, and that's where you get people that are willing to just destroy everything in their path if it means acquiring more money. People that are willing to destroy everything in their path if it means acquiring more power. And so what we've done in our country and in our world is to give the most power to the people who have the most money. The people who have the most money are the ones who have the most greed. Some people are going to be offended by my saying that because they've been taught that the American free enterprise system, including Wall Street, they've been taught that the American free enterprise system, including Wall Street, is a system of wealth creation. It's a win-win game. When I make money, then I spend my money and somebody else makes money, and it's all a win-win-win-win-win. There is nothing at all wrong with making money. The problem with that situation is that it assumes that all wealth is a product of wealth creation. All wealth is a product of inventing something new and then selling that something on the open market, and sometimes it fails and sometimes it succeeds, and when it succeeds, it makes money for the inventor and the creator. And there is some truth in that, but it's also true that whenever you have a billionaire, you have somebody, part of that $1 billion is a result of wealth creation, and part of that $1 billion is a result of theft and murder. Show me a corporation that is really, really big. Show me a Fortune 500 company, and I will show you an enterprise that, yes, they have created something, but they have also walked all over people. Corporate America has been responsible for toxic waste and toxic products. Corporate America has been responsible for genocide and torture and murder in Latin America. And we're not talking about something that is on a small scale. We're talking about something that is on a large scale. We're not talking about something that has happened periodically. We're talking about something that happens every day. So you have people in the current administration like John Bolton and Elliot Abrams. These men are murderers from way back. They are war criminals. They have lied us into wars. They have been responsible for the death of thousands, if not millions. And somebody who thinks I'm exaggerating, you might not understand the extent to which people, especially in Latin America, have just been poisoned and have been driven off of their land. Entire villages have been murdered, and that's the way corporate America works. So now we've got people frothing at the mouth wanting to go into Venezuela. We've got people at all levels of government committing war crimes, including threats. Did you know that the threat of the use of force is a crime under international law? It is a violation of international law. So when a president says all options are on the table, that is the threat of military force. So what I'm saying is, I wish I had better news, but our government is deeply corrupt, and our government is deeply corrupt because it is controlled by corporations and investors and corporate officers that are themselves deeply corrupt. They are people that are willing to take life in order to gain power and money, so it shouldn't be surprising if they are willing to put me and you and our children at risk, because that's what they do. And if we're insufficiently aware that this is going on, it's because they have a really good propaganda system that tends to cover it up and gloss it over. So we must change our political system. We must change our economic system. Not least of all, we need to change this structure that we call corporations, because such as they are, as they're currently structured, they are driven solely by profit and nothing else. On the climate report, we must learn to separate rhetoric from reality so that we can be powerful players in a functioning democracy. The Climate Report is a course in intellectual self-defense, so we can defend ourselves against the onslaught of corporate propaganda, and even laugh at it, because the things we are asked to believe are truly ridiculous, and that's what the Climate Report is all about. This program is part of WFMP's Public Affairs Educational Programming. The views expressed are those of the speaker and not the station. If you have any comments, questions, or feedback, please email info@theclimatereport.net. Now, today's topic is Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard is a congresswoman from Hawaii who has recently announced her candidacy for president. I'm not going to tell you to vote for Tulsi Gabbard, but I am going to tell you some of the things that I agree with in her policies and in her words, and maybe some of the things that I don't particularly agree with or sympathize with. She is one of the most progressive people in Congress and one of the most progressive people running for president, along with Bernie Sanders. So she and Bernie are, you know, running separate campaigns for the Democratic nomination. But I would expect that at some point, I mean, one possible scenario is for Bernie to get the nomination and for Tulsi to be the vice presidential candidate, or vice versa. At this point, Bernie is much more well known, but anything could happen. And it's possible that neither one would get the, it's certainly possible that neither one would get the nomination. But because of their involvement and because of their progressive views, they are making the more moderate Democrats at least be progressive in their rhetoric, if not the reality of their policies. So I'm going to start reading this speech, this campaign launch speech by Tulsi Gabbard. She says, "Aloha. Thank you so much. Growing up here in Hawaii, I loved swimming, surfing, and having fun in this paradise we are lucky to call home. But I gradually realized that I was actually the happiest when I was doing things for other people, doing things to protect our water, oceans, and beaches. This was a different kind of happiness than what I experienced when just thinking of myself. It was a deeper happiness that stayed with me. I knew that no matter what path I chose in life, I wanted to be service to be the foundation. I am proud to serve our country as a soldier. I'm a major in the Army National Guard, where I've served for the last 15 years. I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to serve the people of Hawaii and our country in so many ways over the years. In the State House, where I was elected at 21, serving 100,000 people as member of the Honolulu City Council, and now for over 6 years in Congress. Thank you for your trust and your aloha." One brief word about aloha. So I've learned from Tulsi that aloha is not just hello and goodbye, it's also honoring the other person and their spirit. And what it is, it's just the opposite of the cynicism that is gripping our country, and I mean that. So in the past, I've been accused of being idealistic. I like to think that Over the years, I've learned how to be pragmatic in addition to my idealism. But I wouldn't give you a plug nickel for the person who accuses somebody of being idealistic or naive if it's just their, if they're just endorsing a type of cynicism that is also a kind of resignation and a kind of acceptance of business as usual. We have serious problems to solve in our country and in our world. And one of the main things that we have to do is to not let cynicism be in the driver's seat. Continuing to read the speech, I'm a major in the Army National Guard, where I've served for the last 15 years. A major in the National Guard and proud to serve as a soldier. A major in the National Guard, proud to serve our country as a soldier. I enlisted nearly 15 years ago in the Army National Guard and deployed twice to the Middle East. Our nation was founded on the principle that our government should be of the people, by the people, and for the people, where all people are treated equally and with respect in these United States of America. But today that vision seems like a far-off dream. I agree that she says that, yes, our government was founded of the people, by the people, for the people, and now we have what we have is of the powerful, by the powerful, for the powerful. We have a government of the corporation, by the corporation, for the corporation. And when you hear corporation, don't think brands. When you hear the word corporation, don't think business. When you hear the word corporation, think concentration of power and money, because a corporation is a vehicle for concentrating money and therefore concentrating power. Corporations are, you know, large corporations, not small corporations, but large corporations are vehicles for concentrating money and therefore concentrating power, and they have done that at the expense of everybody else. Corporations and their richest investors have bought our government, and that's why our government no longer works for the vast majority. Now, to some extent, the United States government has always been run by the privileged and the powerful. Repeat, to some extent, the United States government has always been run by the privileged and the powerful. But today, there's even more inequality than ever before, at least more inequality than there has been in the last 100 years or so. And we have power concentrated in a very few hands. And that power does not want to do anything about climate change or any of the other existential threats to our existence. So, in a sense, concentration of power and wealth and the rule by the powerful and the privileged is more threatening and more problematic than it has ever been. Continuing to read, hatred and divisiveness have cast a dark shadow across our country. And I would agree that that's true. It's also true that there has been hatred and divisiveness in the past. I mean, if you were a Native American, you were subject of a lot of hatred. If you were African American, you were the subject of a lot of hatred in the past. So it's hard to say that the hatred now is greater than it was in the past. It might even be less, but it's also more problematic because there's more at stake, and there's more at stake because never before have we had the power as we do now to annihilate our entire species. Continuing to read, we are being torn apart by powerful, self-serving politicians and greedy corporations, inciting hatred, fear, and conflict between us because of the color of our skin, the way we worship, or our political party. This corruption of spirit, driven by greed and selfishness, is eroding the very fabric of our society and democracy itself. I would agree with that. I would agree with that last sentence. The corruption of spirit driven by greed and selfishness is eroding the very fabric of our society. One thing we've got going on now is that corporations and their marketing have convinced us to buy and consume a lot of stuff. I think I was saying that earlier in the episode. But the name of the game is just consume, consume, consume. And some people think that consumption is a part of the strength of our economy, but it's really not. Because the consumption misses the point. The purpose of our economy is to do what's good for people. Consumption doesn't always do what's good for people. It does what's good for corporations. For example, in the last episode, I read this quote in relation to Cuba, quoting from William Bloom's book, Democracy, America's Deadliest Export. He says, longtime American writer about Cuba, Karen Lee Wald, has observed, the United States has more pens, pencils, candy, aspirin, etc. than most Cubans have. They, on the other hand, have better access to health services, education, sports, culture, child care, services for the elderly, pride and dignity than most of us have within reach. In other words, our system is selling us stuff. Our system sells us a lot of pens and pencils, but the Cuban system, you know, especially given what little they have because of U.S. economic warfare against them, they have better access to the things that really matter, not just stuff. So we have, just like Tulsi says, this corruption of spirit driven by greed and selfishness is eroding the very fabric of our society. And if we are selfish as a culture, it is not because we are selfish human beings. It's because our corporate consumerist culture has driven us to that. Every corporation, you know, they want, if they can get it, they want all of our time, attention, and money. They want more, 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 more. They want to sell us more goods and sell us more services. That's their job, because that's the way we've structured this whole thing. It's not really their fault, but it's our job to change the structure. And it's also true, as Tulsi says here, that this greed and selfishness is eroding the very fabric of our society and democracy itself. So, capitalism does not go hand in hand with democracy. Capitalism is the enemy of democracy, if by capitalism we mean unfettered, unregulated capitalism. Capitalism is like fire. It has to be kept within limits. A certain amount of fire is okay, but when fire gets outside its limits, it becomes a wildfire and it's not okay anymore. Capitalism is destroying everything in its path. And there are people in our society who have drunk the Kool-Aid and who have bought into, you know, capitalism is just the best thing ever. But people who talk like that and think like that are usually just oblivious to the environmental destruction and to the human rights violations that are occurring at the hand of American capitalism. No time to go into this, but I've talked about it on other episodes. The United States on the world stage is a tyrant. We have a certain amount of freedom within the borders of our country, but on the world stage, the United States government is a tyrant. And it does that, it is that way, but because it is controlled by big corporations and their money and their greed. So Tulsi goes on to say, this is not who we are, America. The best of our nation is exemplified by our nation's veterans who embody what it means to put service above self, who have sacrificed their own personal interests out of a greater love for our people and our country. Now, this is where I depart just a little bit from Tulsi's perspective, only to make an observation. This is what I talked about episode before last, which is that it's unfortunate that the military is the place where people go to feel like they are serving our country. It is unfortunate that people can't be serving their country in every other occupation. We've got serious problems to be solved. a solar engineer or a solar installer can be serving our country. Why shouldn't we be thanking them for their service? People who focus on organic farming are very much needed. Why can't we be putting them to work and thanking them for their service? People who can figure out problems related to our forests and our water and our ecosystem, why can't we put people like that to work and thank them for their service to our country? We could go on and on with the problems that need to be solved. We need people who understand how water works and how we can make the best use of our shared resources and how we can deliver clean water sustainably to everyone. Why can't we put such people to work and then thank them for their service? Why can't we train people in these occupations and then thank them for their service? It is a grave mistake for people in the military to be the only ones that get that patriotic feeling, and it's a mistake for us to get that patriotic feeling only with respect to our military and to the flag and to people who serve in the military. There are so many ways in which people could be serving our country, and Tulsi will be the first to tell you we have too much military. She is the one who wants us to get out of these regime change wars. She says it all the time. She says people in Washington, D.C. who have never served in the military should not have the authority to put us into illegal wars where our young people, our best and their brightest, are in harm's way because of a war for oil and a war for money and a war that benefits multinational corporations but not the average citizen. Not to mention 200,000 Afghanis or over 1 million Iraqis just in the latest Iraq war, not to mention the decade of sanctions that also killed 1 million people, or the first Iraq war that killed 150,000 or more people. We cause so much destruction at the hands of our military, we need to get to where we can feel patriotism without associating that patriotism with a militaristic need to dominate the world. So I've got about another minute or two to wrap it up. So this episode has been about Tulsi Gabbard and her announcement to run for president. I don't know what her chances are, but she seems to be one of the strongest candidates in terms of her. I mean, there are a lot of people who are ready to get out of these wars. Tulsi has a strong foreign policy, an anti-war foreign policy, and she's a soldier. Her record as a soldier is unassailable. So when you have a soldier who is against war for all the right reasons, it's hard for anybody to criticize that. And these pro-war news networks like CNN and MSNBC have been trying to paint her into a corner, trying to get her to say that Bashar al-Assad is an enemy or an adversary, because she had the nerve to meet with him. But those cable news networks are pro-war because the war profiteers are paying their bills. Anyway, we'll talk about more about Tulsi on the next episode. That's all for now. Thanks for joining me.